back to the Earl Ingram Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. It's Mondays. Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, we're here. Ukraine. It is, we're coming to a point where the Russians are starting to make their mark. They're starting to gain more and more ground. And I was listening to Zelensky over the weekend, and especially this morning, and he's almost admitting that, listen, this thing is imbalanced. We can't deal with the power of Russia. You know, they're still asking for more munitions, but there's, I don't know how many people they said hold up in an old steel factory.
Yeah, that Mariupol.
Yep, that is going to be destroyed.
Azov Star Steel.
Yeah, and that's the only place they can go now. And the military is trapped. What do you think is going to happen there? You know, they're going to slaughter those people in that building. There's not going to be any compassion. And I wonder if that may be what is going to tip the outcry that's going to be, Sandy, when those people are slaughtered in that steel factory.
Well, I think, apparently the Russians gave them an opportunity to surrender,
right.
And they decided, and they said, no, we're going to fight to the last man. So it's the Alamo. War is just a horrible thing, and it's horrible to watch from the outside, and it's horrible to watch something like this unfold. This is a proxy war, and, you know, we're supplying the Ukrainians with enough weaponry to stand up and fight.
And be slaughtered.
But, you know, in this case, we're going to stand, they stood up and fought for a long time, and now they're likely to be slaughtered. And that part of the morality or maybe the immorality of a proxy war is supplying people with the wherewithal to defend themselves, but not to succeed. And so the fate I've been worried about for Ukraine was that we were going to give them what some people call Dutch courage. Maybe Dutch courage comes in a bottle. I can't remember. But the Dutch courage to stand up and fight, but not to win. And so what we're doing really is allowing them to twist and turn in the wind and to suffer a substantial number of casualties and to have a great deal of destruction. And then ultimately to lose the war. Now, what happens after that? I mean, do they get occupied? Is there an indefinite insurgency? You know, the whole how it all plays out is very problematical and difficult to see. But none of it is good in terms of the outcome for the rest of the world as well. Because if it goes through to a military victory for Russia, then we will have an indefinite period of sanctions and isolation and Cold War and essentially Iron Curtain type two, and so this is a very troublesome turn of events, and we can all look at it in the short term perspective of saying it Russia invaded Ukraine, so there's no question what the position of the rest of the world ought to be. But if we looked at it a much longer term, we'd understand that this is a horrible circumstance, and it should have been avoided in some fashion.
You know, Sandy, I forgot what it was. I was reading the other day where it talked about the fact that America's thinking about now giving more offensive weaponry to Ukraine, and that's only going to escalate more Russia's response.
Well, in fact, there was a spokesman for the Pentagon on this last week speaking on various networks, and he described how that they're always trying to carefully consider how far they can go down the road in terms of giving weapons to Ukraine without inciting Russia into taking extraordinary steps in a direction of escalation of the conflict. And so clearly, at least the Pentagon and probably the State Department and hopefully the White House are looking at this with that kind of careful lens to try and figure out what can we do without creating a material escalation that will endanger the rest of the world in some fashion. And however, that's one of the hallmarks of a proxy war. And it's one of the problems that is created by a proxy war, which is it leaves Ukraine as the pawn in this. And so we've got the people of Ukraine fighting this valiant fight.
But they can't win.
That they probably can't win without the escalation that the rest of the world is not going to be willing to offer them. And if we knew that in advance, then we should have adopted foreign policies that didn't embolden Ukraine into taking a position that excited what we've got.
You know, Sandy, there's the longer this goes on, the more I see that our nation is not going to get trapped into what, you know, Zelensky and others are asking for. You know, the other day he was talking about, you know, well, you're not going to send us troops. You just give us weapons, more and more weapons, more and more and more and more. Well, the United States is giving them weapons. The real issue is the weapons that they need to succeed are serious weaponry that will escalate and could especially lead to nuclear war.
Well, I mean, you know, nuclear war. You know, I'm not sure exactly whether that's the outcome. I mean, that is a potential outcome that is frightening, but there are lots of other outcomes that are
just as frightening. Not just as frightening, yeah, as nuclear war, but are pretty bad off.
Very difficult ones to deal with. You know, and Ukraine's a country of 44 million people, and maybe of those. You know, maybe there are some Russians speaking in the East that were not sympathetic to the Ukrainian government. So let's say we have 37 million stridently Ukrainian nationalists who are willing to fight. 37 million people with an army that's probably pretty sizable. If they had the aircraft that they need to have air cover, and, you know, that is a defensible proposition. But the problem is that we aren't going to provide them with all of that. I think they could defend themselves without troops on the ground, given the right kind of weaponry. But we're not going to provide them with all of the weapons that they would need in that circumstance, I don't believe. And now the Russians have started to use what are called gravity bombs, which are essentially the kind of bombs we dropped out of the B-52s over Vietnam, which are sort of random destruction in major areas. And, you know, if Russia decides to go all the way in the direction of that sort of warfare, Katie, bar the door. You know, Ukraine's not going to be able to defend themselves against that. And there's a constant conversation ongoing in this war that's interesting to me, because it sounds like there are some implicit rules of engagement in the war. You know, Ukraine sends helicopters into Russia and bombards a couple of cities on the border, and Russia says, okay, now we're going to get you. You know, and so now, or they sink, or Ukraine sinks the Moskva, this battleship, the cruiser, and then now Russia decides to send missiles into Kyiv. So they have the capacity to do these things, and they aren't doing them, but now they're doing them. So it appears that Russia has a fair amount of military capacity to use against Ukraine, which they are using, have used the discretion not to use in the past, which they are maybe going to use in the future.
So we've sent 11 helicopters. I don't know if they're talking about helicopter gunships. I don't know that we've sent to Ukraine, but that's only 11. And, you know, that's a drop in the bucket when you're fighting an army, you know, the size of what Russia has to offer.
Well, you know, I mean, Germany supposedly announced they were sending $1 billion worth of aid. I don't know if it was money or stuff. And so a bunch of the NATO nations are sending stuff as well. So I don't understand exactly whether Ukraine's getting a combination of money and stuff or mostly stuff. But, you know, but again, as I say, what concerns me about this is not the daily watch over battles and whether Ukraine is winning today or losing today. My concern is that in a proxy war of this nature, if we ultimately don't have and are not willing to give the Ukrainians what they ultimately will need against a war machine like Russia possesses, then why did we let Ukraine get into this position in the first place?
You know, Ukraine and Zelensky obviously knew that there's no way he could succeed in defeating Russia. He knew that going in, right? I mean,
well, supposedly we did. I mean, you know, there's at least been a public discussion about how the U.S. intelligence must have been off, because Biden and the U.S. government were basically warning the world that Russia would overrun Ukraine in a 3 or 4 day war. The government would topple. We apparently called Zelensky and offered him a flight out of Ukraine to give him safe harbor someplace. You know, so apparently we thought the Russians were going to overwhelm them.
Well, but they
quickly.
Probably could have overwhelmed them without the military aid and financial aid.
Yes, I mean, our military aid and financial aid and training and what have you obviously gave the Ukrainians the capacity to defend against what the Russians sent against them. The Russians might also have sent a weaker military. They might have used the discretion in the direction of a less violent assault on Ukraine in the beginning, which was easier to defend against.
Right.
You know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to know because all of this does happen in the dark. But again, I simply repeat that a lesson to come out of this could be that not this lesson about what's happened in the last 2 months, but what's happened over the last 8 years or 10 years, and how did we have the process in Eurasia get to the point where it's gotten, and was there some other course of conduct that would have been more successful for all involved, including us?
You gotta go to break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.